and broken by and by, Lord, by.
Welcome back for episode 2 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show for talking about movies, 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 and more movies. We've got a half hour of movie talk coming your way, and this week we are covering Academy Award nominee Broken Circle Breakdown, the very first Guardians of the Galaxy trailer, A Little Fantastic Four, and one of this weekend's new wide releases, Pompeii. But before we jump into any of that, we've got to introduce the team. I'm Perry Nemroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han. Can you say a quick hello?
Hey.
Hello.
All right, Christy, you want to take it from here?
Yeah, so the first thing we're going to talk about this week is Broken Circle Breakdown, which comes out on VOD. And it's from Belgium and the Netherlands. It's a co-production. And it's this, I warned the girls before we watched this, it's a very sad movie. But it's one of those movies that's like stupendously sad. Like it's such a satisfying sad. But it's about this couple, and it jumps around in time, so it's going to sound like I'm giving away a large part of the movie, but it's actually presented pretty early. It's about this couple that met kind of on the spur of a moment and has like this great one-night stand, and it develops into something much more serious, and the two of them end up having a child together. But that child gets cancer, and the grief involved in that it becomes a major issue in their lives, obviously. But they're not just parents and lovers and all that. They're also members of a bluegrass band, so there's a really amazing score that threads through the film of American bluegrass music. And while they speak Flemish throughout the movie, they sing in English. So I feel like it makes those scenes particularly pop out for English-speaking audiences. And I personally love this movie. I saw it last fall at the insistence of a friend, and it grabbed me and it didn't let go. And the music is so fantastic that I feel like it gives it a life outside itself. And it's nominated for Best Foreign Film. So that's my rundown of Broken Circle Breakdown. So Perry, what did you think?
I'm a little mad at you for making me watch it. It made me so sad. It made me so freaking sad. But I have to recognize it as a very, very well done and especially a very well acted movie. But yeah, I mean, it just made me sad. It's one of those movies that doesn't just make you tear up and then it goes away. It's a movie that makes you like weep and weep at the midpoint. It doesn't even save it for the end. You're crying about something at the midpoint, and then that basically every single bad thing that happens from that point on is like, you know, when you're in a bad mood and you bump your head and you just cry for no reason. It's kind of like that feeling until at the end there's another reason to just absolutely bawl. This thing just killed me, but at the same time, I'll be rooting for it because it was a very good movie, and I'm really into those two actors. I just found them fascinating to watch in every respect. They're just really interesting to look at, really great performers, and the singing in this is just absolutely incredible. I was kind of fascinated by the fact, though, that they could be speaking in another language and all of a sudden jump into like perfect English with American accents. That was fascinating to me. But I just want to listen to the soundtrack now over and over again. I never want to watch the movie ever again because I don't want to ever be that sad. But I'll hold on to the soundtrack. How about you, Angie?
Yeah, it was really interesting to see like how, you know, because as Americans, we see American culture one way. And it was really interesting to see how it looks when it's like filtered through another culture. Mm-hmm. Because these people are, you know, whatever, you know, like Americans who are into Brits are called Anglophiles. They're whatever that is for American people. Like, they have this, like, crazy American fetish. They, like, love cowboys. It's not just the music. Like, they're just, like, really into America.
Yeah. Well, it's, like, that's what's really interesting is that as the disease progresses with their daughter, Didier, it's Didier and Elise. And
yes.
Didier is, he's the male, and he's very furious with America because he feels like this is taking place during the George W. Bush presidency when the debate about stem cells was very big. And he gets very angry because he feels like if America had gotten on board with stem cell research, their child would have had more of a chance. And so he feels very betrayed by America because of that. But America, like the love of America also brought them together because she's got all these tattoos and some of them have kind of like an Americana feel to them. And then he teaches her about bluegrass music and they literally make beautiful music together. And I would call this a musical because people don't sing outside of the context of a stage, but the songs that they sing mean so much in the context of the film.
It's a musical like how Once is a musical. It's the same kind of thing where, you know, there's just music woven in throughout and people don't burst out into song randomly at like inopportune times, but you know, the singing does provide a soundtrack to everything that happens. I know Perry said that she started crying around the midway point. I started crying about 10 minutes into this movie, and I was just like, oh my god. And from there, it's not just the sad things that get sadder. Like, any time that they would look happy together, my heart would break because I knew what was coming. And especially for, like, the first half or so, it kind of felt to me like the movie that Blue Valentine was trying to be.
Interesting.
But that one was a little, like, Blue Valentine I thought was good, but it was a little too, like, the transition was a little too dramatic. There was too little in between, and I thought that this one did a much better job of filling in the spaces. And, I mean, I don't know what it's like to lose a child, and I hope that I never do. But I feel like this movie just really nailed, like, the... It was really... I thought this movie had a really good sense of these characters and, like, the way that and how they're brought together, and then how they're driven back apart by this horrible thing that happens. Are we allowed to talk about spoilers at all? Because I would like to talk about the ending a little bit.
Well, in that case, we're about halfway through this review, so here's your spoiler alert.
Yeah, so if you don't
talking about Broken Circle Breakdown spoilers right now, so
yeah,
if you don't want to hear
minutes.
It, yeah, skip 5 minutes and then tune back in when we start talking about Guardians. Broken Circle Breakdown spoilers, last warning. Go for it, Angie.
Okay, so, you know, what happens is first the kid dies and then the parents start to grow apart and then in the end the mom commits suicide. And I don't know, I feel like at that point it just became a little bit too much for me. Like, I was kind of enjoying, this, like, very realistic feeling, like, not overly melodramatic or anything, like, portrait of a couple that is brought together and then pulled back apart. But for her to kill herself at the end, it just started to be, I don't know, it just felt like it was a push too far into melodrama. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, someone who has lost a child wouldn't feel driven to do that, but it just, for me in this movie, it just felt like it was a little bit too much.
I wouldn't call it melodrama. I just thought it was too much. Like, I just couldn't handle it. I really did believe that that was the next step for her. I saw it coming. They were building towards it. You just knew that she was going to need to do that. That was kind of her only solution. I thought, actually, they sold very, very well that she just had no other option in life. There was, like, nothing left for her, and that's all that could happen. And it freaking just, like, broke my heart for that poor guy. I mean, he was so invested in her. And, like, she was all he had left. Oh, I still can't get over it.
I mean, I've watched it twice now, because I watched it last fall, and I watched it again for this review, and I remembered being ripped apart by it, and it is. I've been telling people, like, the perfect way to watch this movie, and I highly recommend it, is to watch it at night, and to have a glass of wine, and just give yourself over to the flood of emotions. But what I had forgotten is how joyful the movie is, too, because, like, the scenes when the daughter is healthy and she's running around, and the scenes where they first meet, and there's, like, a shower scene where the two of them are having the shower outdoors, and it's so full of tenderness and, like, vibrant joy. Like, once is a good comparison, because it reminded me of how that relationship felt real. Like, it doesn't feel like a movie built around this fiction. It felt like a vibrant, real story that we're getting a window into, and like, you know, the ending is devastating, but I felt like that fits into the bluegrass music they sing throughout, which is all very sad.
You know, that was something I think I missed out on, though, is I get that they loved each other so much, and I love seeing the scenes where they're happy together. I mean, I guess that made me happy to a degree, but in the context of what I knew what was happening, I couldn't enjoy those moments as much as I should have.
I agree that there's a lot of joy and tenderness, but that was... That just made it sadder. Like, if the movie was just sad throughout, that's one thing. But, like, what really tore me up was, like, when it would cut from a scene of them being, like, so upset about their child or, like, fighting, you know, or something,
sure.
And then cut back to this, like, happier moment. And those were the parts that even more than, like, the sad parts sometimes, just like,
This would have been a completely different experience had it been a linear narrative. It still would have been sad, but knowing what was coming every step of the way definitely made it impossible to enjoy everything. Like, you're seeing these great loving moments play out, but at the same time, because you always know what's coming, there's just always this pit in your stomach, and it just, like, sits there basically until it explodes, like, two or three times over.
So I have... I'd be curious to see, I know Perry says she's never watched this again, I'd be curious to see if watching it again changed your mind about it, because what's interesting is, because I knew what was going to happen, I was able to kind of hold on to those nice moments, which I feel like is a neat statement about life itself, because she says, like, things were so good. But two questions. One, do you think this has a shot at Best Picture or Best Foreign Film? And two, would you recommend seeing this movie on VOD?
I haven't seen enough of the films that it's up against to make any, you know, strong recommendation about whether, or strong prediction about whether or not it's going to win. I'll just say that I would be very happy if it won, and I think it's a very good film that deserves a lot of praise. And then, would I recommend people see it? If they're into being sad, yes, I do. I think it's a really, it's incredibly well done, it's very moving, but it is something that you have to know what you're getting into, and what you're signing up for is bawling your eyes out about 10 minutes into the movie.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat in terms of the Oscar situation. I think it's great, but I can't say if it deserves it or not, because I haven't seen the large majority of the films it's up against. But yeah, I mean, as long as you're willing to cry and be really sad after, then give it a watch. But, I mean, really, I'm the kind of person who doesn't like to walk away feeling like that, so it's a little harder for me to recommend. Yeah, you know, it's crazy, because I could watch people die in horror movies, like, in the most crazy ways and, like, saddest ways possible, but I can't watch something that feels real. That's probably why I like horror movies so much, you know? But yeah, this is really sad. If you can handle it, go for it, because the acting is incredible and the music you're going to love. But if you don't like that feeling, maybe you should stay away.
I'm also in the party where I haven't seen The Great Beauty, which everyone is saying is, like, you know, so astounding, and that's nominated. So I would love for this to win, because I think this filmmaking is bold and imaginative and really lovely. And I do think it's, like, once with a sadder story and a better camera work and stuff, because times and technology. But I absolutely recommend it. I do agree that, yes, it's definitely, like, for, it's like where you're, like, giving yourself over to a good cry. But in my review for Cinema Blend, I compared it to My Girl, where, like, it's a profound cry. Like, I felt really satisfied at the end of this movie. Very sad, yes, but, like, you know, it felt well earned. Like, I felt for me, it was a great experience, so I'd recommend it.
All right, now on to a lighter topic. Angie, you want to introduce Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yes. I mean, I don't know what there is for me to introduce. The trailer came out this week during Jimmy Kimmel Live, and it was it's the first footage that's actually been publicly released from the film. Like, we've seen some stills before, and they've shown a reel at, like, Comic-Con and, I think, CinemaCon or something. I don't know. But it's the first time that they've actually released a trailer, and I think a lot of people were skeptical about this movie beforehand, because, like, not everyone knows who the Guardians of the Galaxy are, and just, like, you know, the description, oh, there's, like, a talking tree and, like, a talking raccoon and they're buddies, and, like, it sounds really weird. But I think that the trailer coming out, I mean, based on the buzz that I've heard from, you know, my friends and online and stuff, it seems like people are, it feels like people's opinions have really changed, and people are really kind of excited about it now. It's getting a lot of attention. And I'm super excited for this movie, because I remember when, like, the first Iron Man came out, and it felt like a breath of fresh air after all, like, the gloom and doom, and, like, it's so hard and sad being a superhero movie. And this is the first time that I've, like, that, you know, out of the major superhero franchises that I have felt like, ooh, I feel like we're in for something new and different again, because I felt like Marvel was getting kind of, you know, I still enjoy the movies, but they're starting to feel a little stale, they're starting to feel a little samey, it's starting to feel a little safe. You know, and it's starting to feel safe to the point where it's almost hard to remember that when it first started out, it was like this crazily ambitious thing that everyone was like, really, really, is that going to work?
when it first came out, I thought it was going to end up being like a John Carter of Mars type situation where there's just no way to adapt it, right? But I think this thing is going to be huge, because I think this is going to tap into even more people. Like, Marvel already has an enormous audience, but this is going to pull in even more people who, because,
it's,
like,
pull in the 1% of the human population that didn't see Avengers.
Pretty much. Yeah. Like, I love Marvel, but I'm, like, not over the moon about their movies. This is the first thing in a while, though, that I'm like, what is this bizarre thing? This is fascinating, and it looks beautiful, too. And, yeah, I mean, I'm tired of Dark Knight, and I'm, like, one of you, apparently, who didn't really like Man of Steel much at all. No more brooding. I want to have some fun, and this looks like so much freaking fun. And just, like, the trailer in itself does a really phenomenal job of introducing newcomers to the material. I mean, and not in a way that feels too expository. It's just incredibly fun, and the footage looks looks really crisp and really, really different, and certain colors are popping, and I can't believe I'm praising him because I had major issues with one of his more recent movies called Super, but James Gunn really has something unique here, and I think that's going to be a great selling factor, and that's going to be something that's going to make this much more accessible than the large majority of Marvel movies that are coming out now. And I mean, really, Hooked on a Feeling for that obligatory montage, you really just don't get better than that.
Yeah, it makes me excited about Marvel again, because I feel like this is, like, this trailer really was like, oh my god, these are, like, things that we haven't really seen them try or, like, do, you know, the tone is, like, much funnier and brighter. Chrissy, what did you think?
I think this one, I agree that I think it sets things up really nicely. As I understand it, Guardians of the Galaxy is kind of more fringe Marvel.
I mean, like, even in the trailer, people, they're like, who are these people? Because even people who like comics, like, I don't think a lot of them know that much about the Guardians.
Exactly. And I think the way they set up the trailer is really smart, where it's like, you know, they're legends in their own mind. And I think that's funny because it makes them underdogs, even though they're called the Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, they're, you know, they're underdogs, they're scrappy. I think my favorite part of the trailer is just Zoe Saldana's, like, little smile and her, like, mugshot section. Like, I was like, she is trouble and I like it. But, like, there's a lot of fun in this. I like Chris Pratt already, and so the idea of a movie centering on him is really exciting. Rocket Raccoon actually looks kind of cool instead of super stupid, because, like, as soon as that, like, its synopsis came out, I was like, what is a Rocket Raccoon? Why is that a thing? I think the trailer sells this movie really well.
Yes.
I'm still nervous because I have seen... The last thing that James Gunn did that I liked was Slither. I have seen Super, and I loathed Super. And then he did that other one. I'm trying to remember the name of... it was another superhero comedy about, like, screw-up superheroes. And, like, I hated that, too. So I'm nervous because I've seen him do two superhero movies, and admittedly, much lower budget, blah, 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 blah. But if you can't make it work with a lower budget, I don't know why you would be able to with a bigger budget. That sounds like it doesn't make sense, but what I mean is story, not, you know.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
So I'm nervous because he has, like, a point of view that I don't always get on board with. Like, I like Slither a lot, but, like, beyond that, I feel like he has a tendency to go on down these paths that are, like, dark to a point where I'm just like, and I'm out.
But I don't think this is going to be that dark.
I agree, because I feel like they're pushing it as a kids movie, which, like, obviously Avengers and stuff, tons of kids go to those movies, but I feel like they're adults are really kept in mind, where this feels very much like, I mean, we already saw Perry covered the toy fair. There's tons of toys for this already.
You know, right. That's part of the reason that I got really into it right before the trailer release, because when I went to toy fair and when we saw that Hasbro preview event, I'm looking at these, like, they're just, like, fascinating. Like, I want toys. Like, they were just so detailed and different looking. Like, all the, especially, like, Groot and Rocket Raccoon. Like, all those figures were just, I mean, I want, like, to sit them out somewhere. They're fun to look at. And that's what this whole thing, that's the big appeal here, is that this is fun to look at.
Yes.
Fun to look at, yeah. Fun to watch. It's so freaking different, and I am dying for more of it.
And yes. I was just going to say, it does set up different heroes than we've seen before in this mm-hmm. movie franchises, so that's pretty cool.
Yep. On that note, sorry to rush you out, but it's time to talk about Fantastic Four, that's the other big superhero news this week. I don't think Fox has officially announced anything, but the trades are reporting that it's all but done for the four leads, and it's going to be Michael B. Jordan as the Human Torch, Miles Teller as Reed Richards, Kate Mara from House of Cards as Sue Storm, and Jamie Bell as The Thing. And, you know, Michael B. Jordan has been attached to the movie for a while, but I think, and Miles Teller, I think, is someone that's been kind of
floating around it.
Yeah, and I think Kate, but I think the other ones were a little bit more up in the air. Like, I think
they were
Jamie
talking
Bell,
about Kate Mara for, like, probably, like, 2 weeks now. It was her and Emmy Rossum.
Right.
Those were, like, the last two names for Sue Storm.
And I think that Jamie Bell is something that, I mean, I know it didn't come out of left field for them, but I don't think anyone had really heard much about him being attached to that. So, yeah, that's going to be, like, the next big superhero thing that they're going to try. One thing that gives me a lot of hope is that Josh Trank, who directed Chronicle, which is honestly one of the better superhero movies in recent memory, is directing this one. It does make me feel a little bit like, but Chronicle was so good. Why would you, you know, then constrain yourself by linking yourself to this gigantic franchise where you don't have as much, you know, control to do whatever you want. But, you know, it was a really good movie. It makes me really excited about Fantastic Four, even though they've never really been my favorites. And I love the casting. I think Michael B. Jordan has the charisma that you need to pull it off. I think the fact that he's a black actor is no small thing, because there aren't that many black superheroes at all.
Yeah, you know, and every time there is one, there's some horrible racist faction that's like, but rabble, rabble, rabble. And
when we learned that he was probably going to do it, there were so many people that were like, well, that doesn't work because then his sister has to be black too, and like, she's not. And it's like, you guys have never heard of step siblings, yeah. Adoption. Also, we don't know that they're going to be siblings. Maybe they're just friends or something. This is, you know, it's a movie. They can change
like
that.
All different kind of things nowadays, and it's a movie. Get over it. Like, I like the casting a lot. Michael B. Jordan, I agree. He's so much fun to watch be lively, and the last thing I saw him in was, unfortunately, That Awkward Moment.
That with Michael B. Jordan, yep.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan and Miles Teller. And, like, Miles Teller did his Miles Teller thing where he's, you know, whatever. And, like, I like the idea of him as Reed Richards, because I feel like Reed Richards is normally, like, the Cyclops character where he's like, I have to be very boring and static. And I feel like you don't cast Miles Teller to do that. So I think that'll be a more interesting part.
Yes.
I think Michael B. Jordan is exciting because he's really fun, but in That Awkward Moment, he had nothing to do but look sad and eat ice cream. And I like Kate Mara. She's really spunky. She's been really cool on House of Cards. I loved her in American Horror Story. So I'm really excited to see what she's going to do with Sue Storm. Again, it makes it seem interesting instead of being like, and Jessica Alba, who's lovely, but she just needs to be lovely on screen. They don't require any
more.
Like, with Kate Mara, you're upping that ante. Mm-hmm. And then Jamie Bell is crazy, because I feel like it's going to be a thing where, like, little Jamie Bell, and then he'll, like, bloom out into this huge thing, like Hulk style, which is cool, and then also crazy, because he's just, like, Nymphomaniac is coming out, where he's a BDSM guy, and then he's going to be in, like, this huge franchise movie. I'm very excited about that. Like, way to be Billy Elliot.
I'm all for all four people who were locked in for this, but I've got to say, this is one instance where the rumor mill just absolutely expired my patience. I have had enough of this movie, and it hasn't even started shooting.
Yeah. Oh, you must love Star Wars Episode 7, then, the one where there's a new rumor.
I've been over that one for 2 years.
That one's frustrating me a little, too. I don't know. Star Wars, for some reason, feels like it deserves it a little more. This feels like we're just, like, going in circles, and I almost feel like they're, like, I can't speak for them, obviously, but it felt a little more like they were deliberately dangling things, and I don't know, maybe it was even because I've had to ask casting about casting rumors when I'm talking to these actors, and I don't like doing that.
Yeah.
I'm so sick of it. I'm so sick of it. And I just don't care that this movie is going into production anymore. I've had enough of it already. I can wait now until there's a good trailer, at least.
So you're not excited that it's a That Awkward Moment reunion?
You know, if it is a That Awkward Moment reunion, I am glad that it's the two of them, because I liked their chemistry, not necessarily on screen, because I don't think there was all that much there, but in person, I think that
they
without Zac Efron and maybe with these other two actors in the equation, there could be a really great group dynamic, and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing that at least.
Yes. Yeah. All right, so we should move on to the next topic. Perry, you
want
to take it?
So here we go with our big movie review of the week, Pompeii. Now, get ready for this, because there is a lot of pieces to it. So the movie kicks things off with baby Milo, and Milo is Kit Harington's character. So he's adorable.
Oh, but you're not supposed to know his name. It's a whole dramatic thing.
Yeah. Oh, please. Yeah. Clearly,
whatever.
You already have a hint of how we feel about this movie.
Yeah.
But so baby Milo is all, like, sleeping safe and sound, and then he pops his head out of his little tent, and he finds his family and his little village being massacred by the Romans.
They're a horse tribe.
He lives in a horse tribe. That's very important, too.
It's extremely important.
Yeah. You need to know that. It's really key.
So Milo is the only one who survives this whole bloody massacre, and he is eventually captured by, I guess we don't really know who, like, Romans.
The Romans. The Romans, who are led by Jack Bauer.
Yeah, but well, like no, they don't even end up catching him. Group. Someone else catches him, and then
right.
And then he's thrown into slavery, where he's forced to fight as a gladiator. And then he grows up 17 years later, and someone spots him, and he's like, "This is the greatest fighter ever. Let's bring him to Pompeii." And
from
that's where
Londonium to like, Pompeii is Londonium a real thing? I don't. Doesn't matter. Let's move on. I don't even care.
So cue the romance. He goes to Pompeii. He spots Emily Browning's character, Cassia, and the two just know it's love and want to be together.
Wealthy and, yeah.
The problem with
if
that...
If you've seen Titanic, you know the plot of this movie.
Yeah. If you've seen any movie, you know the plot of this movie.
Pretty much. In every respect.
Yeah.
But the problem with the romance is that Milo goes to Pompeii, and his big deal in Pompeii is that they want him to fight their top gladiator, Atticus, and they have to fight to the death. So that's all super sad. And meanwhile...
Especially because Atticus is the coolest character in the damn movie.
Yeah, so Atticus is played by Mr. Echo from Lost, and he's just...
Does anyone know his name? No.
Because I looked at it, and it's intimidating. It's like, I'm going to... Adewale... Oh, I can't... The last name has so many letters. I'm sorry.
Akinoyu Agbaje? I don't know. On Wikipedia, there's a pronunciation thing, but I am bad at figuring that out.
I should watch that.
And I'm
We're missing, like, such a big part of the story, and, like, the least riveting part of the story.
Yeah.
Cassia's parents, the leaders of Pompeii, want to build a bigger and better city, and that means they have to get money from Rome, and in order to do that, they have to win over Kiefer Sutherland's character,
because
who's a Roman senator.
Because when you make a blockbuster, you want to make sure city planning is an integral part of the plot.
Yes, they started talking about aqueducts, and I was like, why? Why are we talking about aqueducts? Like, why is that?
It's supposed to be tragic, because we're like, guys, it doesn't matter.
How dare you guys interrupt? The plot's not even done yet. We didn't even mention the fact that Kiefer Sutherland's character has a crush on Cassia, even though she's half his age.
Like a weird rapey crush.
Crush, like a really rapey crush.
Yeah.
Not like just like a, oh, she's cute. Like,
yeah, he's like, so. Like everything he says about
it. Oh, he's Billy Zane in Titanic.
Yeah, there you go.
Except that they're not engaged yet at the start of the movie.
No, but he's basically blackmailing her father and being like, unless you give me your daughter, I'm not going to invest in your city revitalization plan.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's all a hilarious joke
Judo
to us.
They can't have that. That's
and you know what I completely forgot to mention? All of this takes place with Mount Vesuvius about to erupt. But I probably forgot to put that in because Paul W.S. Anderson... He literally decides to take the most marketable element of this film, all the fun explosions, ash, and action, and shove it into the last act of the film, so you get practically none of it.
Yep.
So basically, this is a movie about a tacky romance that you've seen time and time again, and political talk that means absolutely nothing. It probably makes no sense if you read the script. And yeah, then you get a teeny, teeny little bit of explosion and volcanic eruption with no lava.
Which, keep in mind... Our romantic leads are Kit Harington and Emily Browning, who between them have the charisma of a dead fish.
Oh, so Kit Harington has never been my favorite Game of Thrones actor because I think that he has one facial expression. He's like Derek Zoolander. He has one look. He pretends they're other looks.
Yeah.
They're not. It's one look. And I was like, maybe in Pompeii, he'll be able to convince... Nope, nope, nope. Still one look. She's not much better.
I don't think she's that bad. She wasn't that bad. I kind of blame the material more so with her.
I'm not saying
she's just pretty on screen. I feel like she's gotten to a point where like she's gotten by on just being lovely to look at on screen, and she doesn't need to know how to act, so she doesn't. She just looks beautiful and tragic and naked, though not in this one, because, God, does this feel like a PG-13 movie. Like,
there's no blood!
But there's a lot of shirtlessness for the men.
I wish I was counting how many throats were slit over the course of this movie. There had to have been, like, 24.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we never see it. I never even see a single drop of blood spill unless it's running down the sword post-throat splitting.
Very artful.
That happened, like, at least 10 times.
Yeah, it's like, when you can tell that a movie is pulling its punches to get a PG-13 rating, it is infuriating to me. And this is a very violent movie. But it doesn't look violent. Like it's what, and what's so frustrating is, of course, you have Jon Snow, and then there's a guy who I swear to God looks like the poor man's Jason Momoa Khal Drogo, who literally has KAL like scarred on his chest. So, and they fight, It's just, it's like you can't see this movie and not think of Game of Thrones, but it's so inferior to Game of Thrones on story and performance and gore and violence and action scenes. So, like, watching it the whole time, I'm sitting there being like, I could be watching two episodes of Game of Thrones right now.
You would really think that they would have changed his look a little. I mean, seriously.
Yes.
Because Jon Snow's hair is, like, freaking iconic.
Yeah.
Just shave his damn head, and then he could be wearing that same kind of stuff and be holding a sword, and who will care? He'll look different. The problem was, this was so literally just, like, Jon Snow in Pompeii.
I kind of felt like Jon Snow or Kit Harington just signed on because he's like, oh, I get to do exactly the same thing, but in a warmer climate. I don't have to be wearing these, like, thick coats anymore. Awesome.
He was probably just looking for, like, his first leading role. And, like, I mean, Paul W.S. Anderson has a name. This could have been good. This should have been a disaster movie. That's just what it is.
No,
it should
have
been these characters without all this political nonsense. Keep the romance, whatever. But have the fucking... do we curse on the show? Have the fucking mountain explode in the first... You know, have it explode at the end of the first act. And then leave the rest of the movie of, you know, the three of them, of Emily Browning, Kit Harington, and I'm not going
to
say his name, so I'm going to keep calling him Atticus. Running from the damn destruction. Why was that so difficult?
Let's talk about the romance. It is the most half-assed romance I have ever seen, even in a movie like this. They basically bond because he is good with horses.
He speaks to horses.
Yeah, basically they bond because she likes horses and he's a horse whisperer.
Ugh.
And that's it. That is the whole basis of their relationship. There's like this thing where they like decide to run away together without any plan, like...
Also, it's a movie set in the Mediterranean where your hero is the Celt. So that's fun.
Right.
Like, it's.
I'll give this movie one compliment. I loved the scene where the slaves / gladiators are chained to the middle of, like, the arena, and then
the
Romans just come out to, like, decimate them. And, you know, that was probably one of the best moments in terms of action coverage, because the large majority of the time, Paul W.S. Anderson has a very difficult time setting the scene and keeping you oriented in the fights, especially when the mountain starts to explode, because when the mountain starts to explode, you don't really see anything. It's all, like, soot and ash, except for a couple close-ups on some people's faces, kind of like, oh, just so you know, like, these two characters are still alive, here they are. But that one scene of the movie was covered exceptionally well. I thought the choreography there was spot on. It was a really interesting set. I like that part.
I want to point out one thing that I feel is important. We never see people run from lava.
There is no lava.
There's no lava.
That is kind of the appeal of the movie, but no lava.
Like, you would assume. And, like, I know in real life Pompeii happened so damn fast that that's why people were frozen in place and whatever. That's not what happens in this movie, but if you're going to see this movie so that you can not have to research Pompeii, then you have other issues in your life, and I don't know what to say to that.
Isn't that really disturbing that, like, in years, kids in school might watch this movie and think it's
then
the real
thing?
Then
the tsunami hit.
It's terrible.
The Roman soldiers killed people, and I'd be like, what are you talking about?
And then a ship sailed through the city, and
The
freaking... All right, wait, I'm going to save this for spoilers. Okay, spoilers for Pompeii.
I know we spoil, but that stuff's in the trailer, so it's fine.
Oh, I guess.
But now we're literally spoiling the last scene.
All right, we're going to spoil everything. So if you don't want Pompeii spoilers, scroll to the end and hear our outro. Spoiler time, you have been warned. All right, I'm going to go with what I was going to say before first. What the hell with that freaking wave?
Yeah, it's...
Who thought that made sense?
No, it's... Like, it's to me, it's like in Battleship, when we went to see Battleship, and the one thing I wanted to see was Liam Neeson say, "You shunk my battleship," and we didn't get that. It's like this, it's a movie about a volcano exploding. How is no one running from lava?
Yeah, seriously, movies, know what you are. Know what people want.
Instead, we get people choking on smoke, because that's action-filled and fun. We get, like, earthquakes, a tsunami, because sure. And I mean, the problem is that you don't feel anything because they've so poorly established all these characters. The only character I felt for was Atticus, and he does go out like a badass because it's Pompeii, guys.
He's the best thing about the movie, and his relationship with Jon Snow is actually, like, kind of cute and fun. And if the romance had been about those two, it would have made so much more sense. Because, first of all, Jon Snow spends way much more time and, like, you know, emotional energy on this guy than he does his girlfriend that he meets once, runs away with no plan for no reason, and then just comes right back. That's a thing that happens.
This also sort of has a magic horse. I mean, it's not really magic, but it's a white horse.
I can't believe we saw two flying white horses. That's all I thought about. We've seen two flying white horses this month.
Yeah. This movie. There's so many things that could have been interesting about this movie, but instead, like, they lace in this. It feels a lot like 300, where there's this, like, political subtext that they throw into the whole thing, and I get that.
It doesn't make sense, though.
No, it doesn't.
Because, like,
it's boring.
Jared Harris's character is, like, the biggest, like, pushover I've ever seen in my life. He had no tactical skills whatsoever.
Well,
he basically just kissed Kiefer Sutherland's feet the entire time.
Yeah, he's just a kiss-ass. And I thought he was, a merchant because of one thing he says, but then he's like, here's the aqueduct I'm going to build. And then, like, I didn't understand what he did. It was very confusing. And
then,
Moss is in this movie.
Oh my god, she's so wasted. I feel so bad for her. Because maybe it's because Kit Harington is also in both movies, but I keep thinking of her in Silent Hill Revelation 3D, where she also has just, like, an absolute shit role. I can't even remember now that I'm thinking about it the last time I've seen her in a solid movie.
Poor Trinity.
I just imagine her sitting on her couch and watching The Matrix, like, on a loop, just being like, what happened? Like,
I know.
She's amazing. Like, she's cool and she deserved more than this, but, like, everybody in this movie deserved more than this, almost. It's dumb. It's, like, it's not even fun. It's not even, like, Winter's Tale, where it's so bad that you're like, well, this is pretty fun. But, like, people were literally laughing at the end of this movie, which is supposed to be this
That
grand
ending. Oh, my God.
It's actually, it's meant to be, like, Broken Circle Breakdown, where you're like, oh, my heart aches for them because they were so in love.
I think that makes it even more pathetic.
That's, like, the saddest description of all I've ever heard. It's supposed to be, like, Broken Circle Breakdown.
I can't believe that they shot that ending and didn't think, wow, this is going to look freaking ridiculous.
So let's just
but
say
I
it.
Love
like,
the
is,
ending. The ending, like, is, was just like, you know what? We're going to go for it. We're going to go full cheese. And
I mean, you
I
know
was
when
like,
they were going
yes,
for it,
I like
whatever.
That.
The ending is literally, so we're literally giving you the very end of this movie. The ending is literally that the two lovers are trying to get away on this sort of wonderful horse that somehow is always on to things, and it doesn't matter. They're trying to get away. They realize that there's no way the horse can carry them both, but neither one of them wants to leave the other. So they decide to kiss as the fire descends on them, so they'll be locked in a kiss for always. And
oh,
then they show
sweet.
You they're like ash, like fucking ash body.
It's like a 2-minute 360 shot.
Yeah.
It's totally CGI circling around them. It's like that moment where people kiss and then it's like, your love. And it's like the camera goes around, except that now it's like opera music and the audience is laughing because it's absurd.
Yeah, the audience was, I think,
the audience, I gotta say, the people that weren't pressed seemed pretty into this movie at the screening last night.
No, but
like,
even
they
were
having
laughing
fun
at the end.
Laughing
they
at
at
it.
The end, but then they clapped, so I guess, but maybe, they didn't have to pay for it. I feel like if you're paying for this movie, you're gonna be mad.
I have a feeling people in our screening just pitied it, though. Everyone was laughing the entire time. Like, I laughed out loud again. It takes me a lot to laugh out loud. Most comedies don't get me to laugh out loud, but apparently really bad movies can very easily. There's this one part that I absolutely love, where there's rocks flying all over the place, and literally out of nowhere, someone just gets, like, fiend in the head and, like, collapses. And just in the context of how
like
shitty that action is, it's hilarious.
Yeah. And that's the thing, the action in this movie is really bad. It's, like, it's that quick cut stuff, and it's, like, partially so they can hide the violence, so they can get PG-13, and partially it's just incoherent. Like, you just don't know what you're looking at, and it's really hard to feel engaged in the action when it's, like, blur, robe, sword, off-screen camera, throat slit. Like,
The movie's also got a shitty pace. It's so freaking slow. Like, and then
it's
so it's slow all the way through that even when you
hours.
Get to the action, it doesn't pick up, really. Like, it's
just
hopeless.
Yeah, I took a lot of issue with how long they make us wait for the Pompeii part of Pompeii to kick in. Up until then, it's just this really boring love story with a political subtext.
Yeah, and it was like, who wrote this script and was like, you know, I know the guy that's good with political intrigue. Paul W.S. Anderson.
All right, so we got to wrap up. I'm going to say take a big fat pass on this one. What about you guys?
Yeah, there's no point to see this.
No. If you want to watch something that's so bad it's good, watch Winter's Tale.
Yeah.
Or just wait until a GIF comes online of that one guy getting hit in the head with the rock. That'll
sure
be worth
that'll
it.
Happen.
But don't see the movie.
Yeah.
All right, so that's all the time we've got for this week. But if you like what you see, follow along at popcornprosecco.com. Catch us on Twitter at popcornprosecco. And also subscribe to our YouTube channel. Again, Popcorn Prosecco. Angie, where can everyone find you on the web?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and you can also find my work on Slash Film.
Chrissy?
I'm on Twitter at Christy Puchko, KristyPuchko, and you can find me on Cinema Blind and Pop Crush.
And you can catch me on Twitter, P. Nemroff, and in an effort to keep this short and sweet, just go to my website, Little Miss Critical, and you can link to all of my work on many other websites. Thank you all for watching. If you'd like, feel free to comment in the section below. We'd love to hear what you think about the show and love your input. We will see you next time.
Will the circle be unbroken by and by?